traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Conversationalists across the fruited plain, it's Eric Erickson here, and I am so delighted to have you with me. The phone number is 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, those of you on the phones, I want to take your phone calls. I want y'all to know you've made my call screener happy. He says, today, it's been a great day, great callers. I want to take your phone calls. However, I want to talk about something that for many of you may seem a little esoteric, but it's actually a very, very important story. And honestly, it's one that should give you some hope. I want you to know, starting out, I'm not an economist. I took economics in college. I used to have a pretty good business brain, but then I got really good at talk radio. And now it's like everything has atrophied. Just, you know, as an aside, I was thinking about this. So there was an interview conducted one time with, it was either Alex or James Soros. I can't remember which one of the sons it was. But forget George Soros' politics for a minute. He actually is a brilliant investor. He's made billions of dollars, whether you like his politics or not. He's made billions of dollars oftentimes in taking advantage of weak currency, things like that. And whichever one of the sons was interviewed said that he's finally had to reconcile himself to the fact that George Soros has a gut feeling, and that there's no math or research or strategy. It's his gut. And that when his gut tells him to buy or to sell or to move in a certain way, he does. And you can study it and try to find the patterns in it, but ultimately it's a gut call. And so the son said, I finally had to realize I'll never be as good as my dad because I lack that gut. Now, I've heard that about him. And then I was listening to somebody talk about Tiger Woods. And Tiger Woods just has a gut instinct on making calls and how to hit. Like Rory McIlroy, who notoriously, like, I really like Rory McIlroy. I'd like to meet him sometime. Rory McIlroy has probably the best swing in golf, and he's known to get to Sundays of golf tournaments and kind of flames out on Sundays, but he has this natural golf swing, and it comes to him at a gut level. It's not a teachable thing. Same with Scottie Scheffler. It's not teachable. It's a gut call. And you find that with different athletes. You find this with some comedians. Like you talk to Dave Chappelle. He has a sense of what's going to work and not work. And he tests it out. He goes to small comedy shows, but it's gut driven. I actually kind of feel like that with a lot of talk radio, that I don't have a gut level feel of how to be a good husband or a good dad or manage my money, but I just have a gut level feeling with radio that I can show up, you put a microphone on my face, give me a topic, and I'm going to be able to talk to you about it for 3 hours. All of that is to say, I'm not an economist. I don't have that. I used to have a pretty good business sense, and then I really got good at talk radio. And my gut is about what works and what doesn't work on radio. And my gut actually tells me, you're going to bore people with the story. But this is such an important story. So I need to tell you, I'm not an economist, but I know who the economists are. And I know who to talk to try to explain to you what's going on and why it's a big deal. The story is in the New York Times. The headline is, A Strong Dollar Weighs on the World. Here's why it's encouraging. We know we have a fiscal mess in this country. We know we not only have a fiscal mess, we're headed off a fiscal cliff. The reality, however, is that as bad as our fiscal condition is in, we're far better off than everyone else. We are the tallest midget in the room, and we're still a midget, but we're the tallest one, and that should somewhat be encouraging. Let me read to you part of this article and help you make sense with what's going on. Two-thirds of the roughly 150 currencies tracked by Bloomberg have weakened against the dollar, with recent strength stems from a shift in expectations about when and by how much the Federal Reserve may cut its benchmark interest rate, which sits around a 20-year high. High Fed rates, a response to stubborn inflation, mean that American assets offer better returns than much of the world, and investors need dollars to buy them. In recent months, money has flowed into the United States with a force that's being felt by policymakers, politicians, and people from Brussels to Beijing, Toronto to Tokyo. The dollar index, a common way to gauge the general strength of the U.S. currency against a basket of its major trading partners, is hovering at levels last seen in the early 2000s when U.S. interest rates were also high. The yen is at a 34-year low against the U.S. dollar. The euro and Canadian dollar are sagging. The Chinese yuan has shown notable signs of weakness, despite officials' stated intent to stabilize it. It's never been truer that the Fed is the world's central bank, says Jesse Rogers, an economist at Moody Analytics. So what does all this mean for you? You can put your money in a savings account in the United States right now and get a better return on investment than in any other country on the planet. Inflation in other countries is outpacing our inflation. Americans can spend their money abroad and travel abroad cheaper than anyone else on the planet can travel abroad right now. That means the U.S. economy, despite all of our problems with our national debt, is better than everybody else's economy. This is the problem for the Biden administration at a political level. The macroeconomic picture of this country is so good, the Biden administration is trying to sell it. Well, the microeconomic picture, the economics at the household level, are not good. And the Biden administration can't really translate into why this is a good thing. The dollar is on one side of 90% of all foreign exchange transactions. A strengthening U.S. currency intensifies inflation abroad as countries need to swap more of their own currency for the same amount of dollar-denominated goods, which includes imports from the U.S. as well as globally traded commodities like oil, often priced in dollars. Countries that have borrowed in dollars face higher interest bills. Now, let me pause here. I make this point when I talk about the desire of some on the right and on the left now to be isolationists, to pull things home, go on, we're not dominant anymore, let China and Russia take it. This is a prime example of why that would be a bad idea. The dollar is on one side of 90% of foreign exchange transactions. In other words, whenever currency around the world is used on the global markets, it is exchanged for dollars, and the transaction is done in dollars. When that happens, the countries have to swap their currency for dollars. And when that happens, they have to put more of their currency in to get dollars out because the dollar's priced so high right now. Not only that, countries that borrow in dollars face higher interest rates. And most countries borrow in dollars because then they don't have to go through the exchange process on the global market. So let's put this in terms that make sense to you. If the United States stops leading the world, remember the entire post-World War II order was to put the United States in charge. If the United States now says, all right, our bad, we're going to go back, we'll let China do it, Russia do it, whatever, suddenly the exchange rate no longer benefits us, it's going to benefit whatever country's in charge because the majority of global transactions will happen in that country's currency, not our currency. And when we borrow money abroad, we will have to pay the interest rates of those countries, not our own country. So our cost of doing business abroad will go up. Our cost as a nation to borrow money will go up. And our cost as a nation economically to transact on the world stage will go up because we'll be using someone else's exchange rate. Right now, the United States is uniquely the only country on the planet that does not have to exchange its currency in a global transaction. Why? Because 90% of the world transacts in dollars. So we don't pay an exchange cost that every other country does. Because the dollar is so high right now, it's also attracting a massive international investment into the United States because these businesses and individuals abroad can park money inside U.S. bank accounts and get 4% or 5% interest, which they can't do at home right now. Why can't they do that at home? Because while their interest rates may technically be higher, so their savings accounts might be higher, their currency is valued less than ours, and so their interest rates, even though higher than ours, aren't high enough to match the currency exchange rate to the United States. Now, that's a very complicated way, and I'm trying to simplify it to say that their cost of their money right now, someone puts money in a bank account in China and collects interest in China, let's say it's 10% interest on the renminbi or the yuan, as their currency is called. Because the Chinese money is so much less valuable than American money, they're still not making as much money with a 10% interest rate on the savings account as they would be with a 5% interest in an American savings account getting American dollars, because the American dollar trades so much more expensively abroad. This allows us to travel more. This is actually economically a strain on the American business because our goods are more expensive abroad right now. We can more cheaply buy stuff from China, India, Vietnam, even Great Britain and Canada than they can buy from us because of our currency. But globally, the dollar is still king. Because the dollar is still king, and because we don't have to pay an exchange rate that every other country on the planet does, we can continue to transact business in ways other countries can't, even with the national debt the way it is. All of this shows us we have a window in time by which to fix our economic problems. We have a window, we have a period where we can deal with our debt without burdening the United States, because a lot of the other countries are going to pay transaction fees to engage in dollars that benefit us. We're in pole position globally. We have the strongest economy. It's not an economy working for most of us listening. My dad, I mentioned yesterday, said that the 50s become the new 20. He used to be able to go get $20 bills, pay for his and my mom's groceries with a $20 bill. Now it's 50. We're dealing with inflation too. But because of the exchange rate, because of the currency rate, because of the currency costs, you can buy stuff from any other nation on the planet now cheaper than you've ever been able to before, even with inflation. It's the transactions in this country where the inflation comes in, because groceries, because so much of your food is generated in this country. That's why it's expensive. The strong dollar is hurting Asian nations. And you know who it's really hurting the most? It's hurting Japan. The American dollar, unintentionally by the Biden administration, I do think it's unintentional. I don't think they want to leverage against Japan, but the American dollar unintentionally is being leveraged against, not Japan, China. And the Chinese costs of doing business have gone up, and it's starting to spiral China's economy into the gutter, because the Chinese still to this day have to convert so much of their international transactions into dollars, and they can't keep up with it. They've got a debt crisis. They've got a real estate crisis. They've got a commercial banking crisis in China, and the American dollar, completely unintentionally by the Biden administration, the American dollar is so strong right now, it's causing a further economic spiral in China. And that helps us stay competitive against the Chinese who want to go to war with us. It forestalls, to some degree, war right now because it costs the Chinese too much to go to war. This isn't going to last. But while it's here, our policymakers have the time, if they have the courage, to fix our financial mess without an economic fallout in this country. We'll see whether or not they can actually do it. I'm not holding my breath, but now would be the time.
You can follow Eric around on social media at EW Erickson on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. And check him out at EWErickson.com. Want to be on the show? Come on, be on the show. Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
Greetings, conversationalists. I sure hope you're doing well. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Larry in Kansas City, Missouri. At some point, I'm going to get out there and enjoy some good Kansas City barbecue. Larry, how are you?
I'm just getting ready to walk in to have some barbecue now. So,
oh, my gosh, you're killing me, Larry.
If you were here, I'd buy.
Oh, man, I got to get out there. I really do. Okay, Odyssey guys, we need to find a way to get me out there. Larry, what's going on?
Doing well. Enjoy your show. I'm a big-time news and political junkie going way back to the beginnings of Rush Limbaugh, and sure miss him.
Sure do.
As we all do. But what has been frustrating and even more curious, with an emphasis on the word curious to me at this time and even the past couple of years, is the clear-cut organization of these major protests. You know, their resources, signs, mm-hmm. tents, T-shirts, whatever. And the same with the 500 and some protests back in 2020, other Antifa protests. And we hear of stacks of bricks being dropped off at street corners. I mean, mm-hmm. over and over again, we hear about the organization of it. We hear George Soros's name thrown about, but which I don't deny. But I never hear Chris Wray. I never hear the FBI about initiating any investigation. And my gosh, the investigations that they'll jump into, you know, even local school board meetings, whatever. But
yeah.
The fact that it's talked about so much. That these are organized, and it has to do with creating anarchy in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I don't hear the news pundits.
So,
I'll hear
okay,
them bring it up, but I'll never hear them say or ask the question beyond that.
Yeah, it's funny you should say this. And you know, Chris Wray was interviewed recently and said we're not involved with looking into protests on campus. Yes, they actually are. I've got a buddy of mine who I believe who has some insider knowledge who says, like, for example, in Portland, Oregon, when they had the big protests out there in 2020, that some folks embedded into the crowd with cell phone readers trying to figure out where text messages were coming from and stuff. And that actually that they do believe there's some level of coordination and a growing sense that there might be some foreign cooperation in these things. I would say this, based on the conversations I've had with several people, that we may not be seeing that this work is happening. But there may actually be some investigations behind the scenes. I know, for example, I know for a fact that they're tracing cell phone calls. But I do think the FBI probably needs to step forward more than it is and say what they're finding. Now, I got to tell you about Stamps.com here. Y'all, I have sent now 12 packages in the past couple of days through Stamps.com. And yesterday I arranged pickup at the office, and it works so simply. It really does. You go to stamps.com, you put in Eric in the microphone, or you click the microphone, put in Eric, E-R-I-C-K. You'll get a free digital scale, you'll get some free postage, and you have no long-term commitment, no contract to sign, and you start getting up to 89% off UPS rates. I'm shipping stuff across the country for less than $8 through stamps.com, and like 2-pound packages. It was great. And arranged pickup at my office. Never had to go stand in line. The other day I did because I shipped out on Sunday and I dropped them off. But you get post office, UPS, competitive rates. You find the fastest option. You find the cheapest option. You find the best option. You can even get your supplies from Stamps.com, and you have no long-term commitment. Stamps.com, you click the microphone, you put in Eric, E-R-I-C-K. You can get shipping and you can save money. I am living proof of it with Stamps.com. Go check them out today. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, and the phone number is 877-973-7425. Let's take a couple of phone calls. Glenn, you're going to be up next. Welcome. How are you?
I'm fine. As a RICO expert, I got a RICO question for you. But first, since you have such a disdain for the left so-called experts, I wanted to give you my father's definition that puts them in perspective. Expert, an X is a has-been, and a spurt is a drip under pressure.
That's well done.
Yeah, he told me a handful of things. That's one of the few things I remember. But anyway, RICO question. So the protests are going on and they're being well organized, 50-tenths the same type. So the question is, could they be? Should people be charged under RICO, and at what level of crime and what crimes would allow that? Because if they do arson and whatnot.
You know, I actually think one of the reasons that we're not seeing these aggressive protests in some more conservative states is because of RICO, because they legitimately could use RICO in some of these cases to track down the funding and find out what they're doing. The Letitia James in New York would never do that with Columbia. And New York's RICO law is not as aggressive as, for example, Georgia's RICO law. But I do think if there are some enterprising attorneys general in the states where this happens, like Florida, for example, although Ben Sasse has done a good job of cracking down on them at the University of Florida, so they haven't gotten to the point some of these places. Yes, I absolutely think RICO is a tool in the arsenal to figure out what's going on here. I do think that there are people within the federal law enforcement, the FBI, who are looking into the funding. And I do think we're going to find out over time that it is foreign funding that's coming in to help a lot of these organizations. I don't doubt that at all. And I don't even think that's a conspiracy theory. I think it's been well shown that, like, Students for Justice for Palestine and others are funded by Qatar and other outside entities. It's not going to surprise me if we find out there's a Chinese tie in here. I mean, the Democrats keep saying, oh, the Chinese want to disrupt our elections. Well, here's how they're doing it, people. It's not trying to steal votes in the ballot box. It's Purge 2024 at the Democratic National Convention. Ron in, one of my favorite places, Pinehurst. I got to go. I've been invited multiple times and I've never been, and it's one of my favorite places I've never been.
Hey, Eric, my phone's
about to pop. Uh-oh. Yeah, you're out there in the rural Carolinas, and here I've just fired up your phone call.
Hey, how about now? How's this?
Perfect.
Is this good?
Perfect. Yes.
Yeah, you need to come up for them to open. I missed you, Adam, the Masters, but I was there on Friday as well. But is this the first time in history that the victim has ever been protest against? I can never remember the aggressor being the one that acts like something's happened to him, and everybody's protesting the victim.
Well, you know, I mean, there were in the Middle East, there were the people who cheered on 9/11, and you had some college campus protesters here doing that as well. Never let an enemy go without cheering them on for some of these protesters. But yeah, listen, it is a uniquely, I think, anti-Jewish phenomenon. They say it's anti-Zionist, but it's anti-Jewish. And it is a warning sign for all of us, Ron, that the anti-Semites on these college campuses deny that they're anti-Semitic. They say, we don't hate Jews, just Zionists. Well, who's a giant Zionist? A Jew. They play word games with the language to try to justify it. We got a real problem with these people, and it's not just foreign-born, although I think all the foreign-born protesters need to be thrown off campus, and they need to be deported from the United States. But there are a lot of white American kids. I shouldn't tell the story, but I'm going to tell the story. So, you know, at the university, or at Emory University, they had that blonde-headed girl who was screaming about the police officers dragging her off to jail. And she says, oh, you're hurting me. You're hurting me. I have a right to protest. I have a right to protest. And she tried to turn around on the cop, and he picked her up, like manhandled her, picked her up and dragged her off campus. My wife saw that video. She says, oh, maybe I need to go protest up there. Like, wow, thanks, dear. I guess I need to work on my deadlifts now. I guess that's what you're telling me. But, I mean, you got these blonde-haired, blue-eyed little Nazi kids out marching in the streets against the Jews, and they don't recognize that they're on the wrong side of history. They don't recognize that they're the bad guys. And, of course, no bad guy ever thinks he's the bad guy. I mean, Adolf Hitler thought he was on the right side of things. It's the bad guys always justify themselves. Always justify themselves. That's not going to change. But what I do think is these guys are underestimating the backlash coming by the American public. I think that when the American public looks around and sees this sort of stuff, they've got a massive backlash coming against the against what's happening. Jonah, I was looking. I'm rambling somewhat, and I'm sorry because I'm trying to find this piece. This is it. Jonah Goldberg. The current campus demonstrations are a reminder that of all the mossy cliches and puffed-up pieties of polite and impolite American discourse, the sanctity of protest is the hardest to question. Doubting the loftiness of protest invites elite scorn more than any other skepticism about a constitutional right. Proposing limits on free speech, for example, attracts far less hate outrage. Indeed, people question free speech all the time. In debates about hate speech, campaign finance, social media, and more, let's not even get into the fashionableness of questioning Second Amendment rights. But if I say that most protests are performative cosplay or mass meetups of the angry, the radical, the lonely, or the misinformed, someone is bound to point to the civil rights protests of the 1960s or the campaign for women's suffrage, followed by a string of righteous how dare yous. That gets to part of my objection. There's nothing inherently good or bad about protesting. Organized protest is a form of speech, and like speech, it is rightly protected by the First Amendment. But also, like speech, its morality, though not its legality, is wholly dependent on the content. You have a right to say or to protest for awful things. Invoking that right doesn't make your view any nobler. The Jim Crow era civil rights protests were noble because the cause was noble. They did not prove that protesting is always good, merely that it can be. Replace the March on Washington with the Nazi march on Skokie, Illinois, and you get the point. The aesthetics and psychology of protest are often ugly because crowds encourage extremism and intimidation. Well-intentioned protest organizers know this better than anyone. They often struggle to keep the crowds from becoming dangerous mobs. The core message of mass protest is strength in numbers, a primordial feeling that can often lead to a kind of illiberal power drunkenness. The hallucinations of alcoholics provide us with an opportunity to study crowds as they appear in the minds of individuals. Elias Canetti writes in his brilliant book, Crowds and Power, some argue that democracy is all about strength in numbers, and that's partly true. But democratic will is exercised by the private actions of individual voters casting secret ballots. The strength in numbers invoked by most large protests is better understood as populism, and populism has an uglier history than democracy, from the long history of race riots to January 6th. The irreducible political unit in America is the individual, not the crowd. The highest form of protest and speech is captured in Norman Rockwell's famous painting of a lone working-class dissenter standing up for his conscience as his neighbors listen politely, not by images of mobs shouting insults, blocking traffic, occupying buildings, or worse. Again, not all protests are ugly riots or mass tantrums. But the tolerance often shown for both is a product of romantic impulses driven by 60s nostalgia. Now, I'm going to stop there reading Jonah Goldberg, and I'm going to force you to listen to Joy the Idiot Reed on MSNBC.
The message is clear. The government and university presidents want you to know that the right to protest is a farce. You can be tear gassed, shot with rubber bullets, tackled and thrown to the ground and arrested. At Emory University, a shocking scene unfolded as Atlanta police and Georgia state troopers arrested protesters and released chemical agents on campus. At least two videos have emerged of Emory professors getting arrested. This is Professor Noel McAfee, who will join us in a few moments. The use of police force against these protesters should alarm you, and it mirrors the violence that is happening in Israel, with police responding to anti-war protesters there as well. You have to wonder why. Why would the state line up against our students who are the future, especially young people like these who are at some of the most prestigious universities in America, doing exactly what one is supposed to do in college, which is to think critically, stand up for what they believe in, and demand a better world?
Okay. Charlie just made a good point, and I'll give him credit for it. I was going to go in a different direction, but actually his note, I think I'm going to go in this direction. I think this makes a good point. Joy Reid wants you to not believe your lying eyes. Joy Reid claims that all the protests they're innocent. Actually, they're trespassing. They weren't given permission on private property to do their protest. And so they broke the law by protesting. That's not innocent. It's not passive. It's lawbreaking and lawlessness. And at Columbia and elsewhere, they engaged in violence. Compare and contrast the terrorist sympathizing protesters to the March for Life. The March for Life happens every year in Washington, D.C. Every year gets a massive crowd. And every year they clean up the place before they leave. Every year they're peaceful. Every year the media gets bored with coverage. And every year they make their case. It is a model protest. And the media hates it because they don't like the cause. And the media ignores the peaceful nature of it. The media ignores it, except, you know, that one time they decided to slander Nick Sandman and they lost their shirts in court in litigation to Nick Sandman because they lied about him. It wasn't Nick Sandman who was the disruptive racist protester. It was the guy harassing Nick Sandman. Joy Reid and MSNBC, they've really just begun to engage in assassination porn against the right. They really want leftists to start killing people on the right, particularly Donald Trump. They don't have any use for truth. They don't have any use for integrity. They don't have any use for honesty. They're just trying to get people on the other side killed. At some point, it's going to work. They've already inspired two mass assassination attempts in this country against the right. And there's been no accountability. If James Lee Hodgkins and Floyd Lee Corkins had been Fox News viewers, we would still be talking about it to this day. But because they were both MSNBC viewers, the media doesn't want to make eye contact with it. Joy Reid is trying to provide some claim that these anti-Semitic terrorist-supporting protesters are peaceful, law-abiding citizens. They're not. She won't talk about the March for Life because they were peaceful, law-abiding citizens. And the contrast is striking. It's always the people on the sides of the bad guys who cover their faces and smash the windows. It's always those people. If it's January 6th Republicans, they'll cover it. But if it's protesters for Hamas, they'll pretend they're innocent people. And that in and of itself gives you the media bias. The media itself is sympathetic to actual terrorists, and they hate American citizens who happen to support Donald Trump. Now, let me tell you about Hillsdale College, a great conservative institution out of Michigan that has a view that it should educate every American, not just those on campus, and so wants to give you free of charge Imprimis, a great conservative newsletter with great conservative thought. I've been getting it since law school. You can get it, too, by going to ericforhillsdale.com, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. If you go to ericforhillsdale.com, put in your address, you'll start getting Imprimis completely for free. It's a great publication with leading thoughts from leading conservative luminaries, Chris Rufo, Heather McDonald, Victor Davis Hanson, even Dr. Larry Arnn, the president of Hillsdale, is in it on occasion. You can read it, digest it, process it, get great intellectual stimulation, and it's completely free. You never pay a penny. It's part of Hillsdale's education mission. ericforhillsdale.com, E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. Get Imprimis from Hillsdale College. Start a relationship with Hillsdale today. Get it completely for free. Never pay a penny and learn way more about Hillsdale College and about the conservative ideas and ideals and values that you profess. ericforhillsdale.com.
Well connected and well respected. It's Eric Erickson live every weekday. Join Eric's army of activists. Text ARMY to 33777 now.
Greetings. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me here at the end of the show. I think I can get to Steve's call. Welcome, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing, Eric?
Great. What's going on?
Hey, just after seeing everything unfold the way it has been, do you think that there is either something brewing up or at least cases being filed for those over the past 4 years that have been punitively or experienced some kind of punitive action at universities for conservative actions?
Yeah, listen, take for example, there's a video that came out today at UCLA where a Jewish student tried to go into the library and Palestinian supporters blocked him from going into the library. Some of them looked immigrants. A couple of them looked just like normal American suburban white kids. Blocked the Jewish student from going in, say, no Zionists allowed. You're a Zionist. You can't come in. He's paying tuition, and the university's not protecting his rights to use the facilities. Yes, I think there's a lawsuit there. I think there are multiple lawsuits around the country that these Jewish students can and probably should file. They've also other students, not just the Jewish students, people who are students who are paying tuition and have lost the use of campus because of these protesters that the university's allowed to get out of hand, knowing in some cases they were going to get out of hand, and then once they got it out of hand, refused to do anything about it. Yes, massive litigation should come to these. And frankly, J.D. Vance is out, the senator from Ohio, with the idea that we should be taxing these university endowments. And I think I'm there. If these universities are going to use their endowments, turn a blind eye to anti-Semitism, and allow this violence on campus, might as well tax them. Maybe set it like $1 billion. If you got an endowment of $1 billion or more, then we're going to tax it, punitively tax it. Might as well. They are denying Jewish students access. They're denying Jewish students an education. And it's not just Jewish students, but people who are not Hamas sympathizers are being denied an education, being denied access to their campus. File lawsuits. Conservative states should go after these students and file RICO claims against them and figure out where the money's coming from. It's time to be aggressive. It's time to take on this issue. I think they should. Now, I got to tell you about something happening here in my home state of Georgia that's actually a really big deal. Plant Vogtle is the newest nuclear power plant in the United States. It is way behind schedule, way over budget, but Georgia Power and Southern Company continued to build this because they realized something very important for all of us, regardless of where you live. The institutional knowledge in the United States of how to build a nuclear power plant is pretty much gone. All the people who built them in the 70s are dead or retired. So Southern Company decided to build this power plant, even though Westinghouse went bankrupt, even though there was lack of engineering capacity in the United States to do it, because they realized we needed to relearn how to build nuclear power plants in this country for our economic survival. And the second nuclear unit has come online for commercial service. It is the end of an expansion of a nuclear power plant near Augusta, Georgia, and actually has been successful. They have started two nuclear power plants, units 3 and units 4 are nuclear. It's in Burke County in Georgia. It's the first new nuclear power construction in the United States in decades. The amount of institutional memory we lost that Southern Company in the private sector has been able to rebuild is good for all of us because we need a massive increase in nuclear power capacity in the United States. And environmentalist activists hate it in large part because environmentalists are actually anti-free market, anti-capital, and anti-United States. They want us dependent on China, Russia, and elsewhere. They don't want nuclear power in this country, not because they're scared of nukes, but because they actually are opposed to power generation. So good for Georgia Power for sticking with it, and this is great news for all of us nationwide.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.